Did you think you'd be hearing a holiday ad this early? Beat the rush with Minted, your destination for unique holiday cards, gifts, and seasonal decor from independent artists. Use code PODCAST for 20% off your order.
88% of the work week is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
The Last Word on Today FM.
George Hamilton is with us for the Culture Club. Great to see you, George. And a new book. You played a clever one. When you did The Nation Holds Its Breath, you actually kept enough stories back for extra time for a second book.
This wouldn't be a football match without extra time, would it? The possibility, at least.
So what have you got in the Hamilton notes?
Well, it's more of the same, really. This commission for the Nation Holds Its Breath was quite specific, and I took that to mean it was the Jack Charlton era, the Jack Charlton story. So a bit about me and then that. So there was lots more, because obviously it wasn't just football. I did rugby, I did track and field, and of course there's Lyric as well. So there was all of that, and the travelling, and the stories of trying to put the show on the air, the Lyric show on the air, when you're maybe not in studio or things are going wrong, or you're sitting in the Stadio Olimpico in Rome with Sean O'Brien, the musically talented sports producer from RTE, who just loved the challenge of putting a live radio show on the air half an hour before the rugby kicked off, which was absolutely terrific fun.
Okay, you're sort of semi-retired now, are you?
Well, I don't like that word.
Sorry.
You're quite entitled to assume that. But I don't necessarily want to stop.
Doing things. I mean, you've got twice a week on the radio show, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Saturday and Sunday on Lyric, and then the Premier Sports. I'm taking my foot off the gas a bit. You could put it like that I didn't want to carry on at full tilt, and I was happy with the way that things had kind of eased off. But then it came to the point where I thought, well, you know, the contract's up, what's next? And what's next turned out to be Premier Sport, and there I am, and here I am talking about the book, and there's lots more going on. I still feel energetic, I still feel energised, I still feel enthusiastic about what I do. So I feel as long as that's working and that there's an audience that wants it, we'll carry on.
Now that you're commentating a lot less, and you're doing some football and Premier Sports, do you watch as much sport? Are you as interested in it now that you're not working as much in it?
Do you know what? I watch more sport.
Do you?
I actually watch more sport than I ever did before, because I was so focused on what I was doing that it was all kind of job-related.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, we were on a family trip to the Lake District in England, and I watched all the rugby matches because it's a rugby household. And I would never have done that if I hadn't had the scope and the time to do it. And I find I'm now, you know, going to matches more, shouting at the referee or whatever.
But, have you been sort of bottling it up for years?
Yes.
In your commentary that you wanted to be abusing the referees?
I have to now let it out. Yeah. So I'm watching a lot more sport, believe it or not, which may sound like a contradiction in terms, but is an actual fact.
Okay, listen, let's get to your Culture Club choices, because you clearly love your music as well. Mm. We ask every guest to tell us about the first single that they remember buying. What's yours?
Well, it was a single entitled Dream Girl by a guy called Mark Winter. I believe he's still around. I was only 11 at the time, so we're back in the early 1960s. Across the road from me was a pal, a couple of years older, a guy by the name of Paul Smith, who went on to go into television as well and invented Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So he didn't need to be worrying about buying records or anything even then. He was happy to have his friends in, and if they wanted to buy a single, they could bring it in and play the music in his house, because he was always that kind of an entertainer fella. And he said, if you don't have a record player, which I didn't, why don't you go and buy a single, whatever you want, and bring it, and we'll play it along with our other mates' records. And so that's what we did. So I had this single that I kept at home, and every now and then I'd cross the street and go into Paul Smith's house, and he'd put it on, and we'd play it.
Let's hear a little bit of Dream Girl by Mark Winter. 1960s, George. That sounds like further back 1950s music.
The 1961, the Beatles were just about to explode onto the scene and everything was about to change. But that was 1961, Mark Winter, Dream Girl.
Never heard that before.
Yeah, I remember the words. I remember the lyrics. It's terrible.
But you used to do a thing, I believe, that a lot of us would have continued doing for decades afterwards, maybe recording music off the radio. But you had, how did you do it?
I had a tape recorder, a proper reel-to-reel tape recorder. I think my parents were looking at the financial implications of buying me a record player and what it would mean down the line with all the records that I would buy and then not listen to. So they thought this would be a good idea. We buy him a tape recorder and a couple of 30-minute tapes, and he can record off the radio. And I had a lead that went straight from the radio into the tape recorder, so the quality was absolutely terrific. The only problem was when you recorded something that you liked and you played a lot, and there was a DJ like the late, great Larry Gogan who maybe talked over the intro and timed it to perfection. Every time you heard that piece of music or that song, you had the intro in your head as well, the DJ's intro, because he'd recorded it as you were recording the song off the radio.
Were you cutting and splicing the tapes to try and get rid of things like that?
I was, yeah. And I was quite a dab hand at it at the time, but no more. But that was my source of music, was reel-to-reel tapes. And Alan Freeman on Pick of the Pops on BBC Radio 2, as it became, was my source. Every Sunday at 5, I'd get the latest and I'd have that for the week, and then it would be replaced the next week.
Favourite album? What are you going for? I know this is a really difficult one to ask somebody who's so into their music, but tell us what sort of things you have in mind and what you've gone for.
Well, now I would be very much... I like listening to the Eagles now. I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube, like the Eagles, New Kid in Town and that sort of thing, or Donald Fagan and Walter Becker and Steely Dan. So those would be things that I like a lot now and get a lot of pleasure out of. I also watch orchestras, because the thing about it, it's a bit like watching an opera on TV. The cameras are actually in there, in among the players. So you get a much greater sense of the orchestra playing when you can see them like that than when you're sitting in the stalls or in the gallery just looking at them. So I do a lot of that. Favourite album, though, I'm going back to the beginning when I eventually realised that I should have a record player. I was in my 20s and I bought one then, and then I started buying albums. And I was very fond, and still am very fond, of the music of Elton John and Bernie Taupin. And the first Elton John one that I bought was Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player, which I thought was a crazy enough title. And I really, really enjoyed it. But looking back on it now, over 50 years ago, and the songs are, not all of them, but some of them are still up there.
Including the one we've picked, Daniel. Standout track from that album?
Oh, there are several. There really are. It's just a wonderful album. I would pick that one myself as the standout. But when I went looking, when I was being asked this question of a favourite album, and I had the impression that there was a Steely Dan one with all these wonderful numbers on it, or there was an Elton John one with all these wonderful numbers on it. There isn't. They're all over the vast panoply of albums that came out. I think the thing about going for Elton John and that crazy title, Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player, because I'm a piano player myself, I was attracted to the music of piano players, because I could imitate that myself as opposed to the guitar men. And so Elton John's in there for a very obvious reason. And, you know, at party time, he has a great songbook to dip into to get the party rocking.
Which brings us to your favourite band or artist. So you've picked for that?
Yes, another piano man. The piano man, Billy Joel. I mean, I just... sums up for me what can be achieved as an entertainer on the piano. I mean, he started off playing in bars, a bit like Johannes Brahms, the classical composer, did Hamburg 100 years before. Billy Joel started off playing in bars in New York and New Jersey, and his song Piano Man tells the story of a night in a bar with these, shall we say, less than happy individuals surrounding his piano. And they put bread in my jar and say, man, what are you doing here? Because he's so good. And he is, like Elton John, he's so good. So he's my man, and I love playing Piano Man. And I actually got the chance to perform Piano Man on the stage of the Olympia Theatre with Second Captains.
Well, let's actually hear a bit of Billy Joel singing Piano Man.
It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday. Regular crowd shuffles in. There's an old man sitting next to me, making love to his tonic and gin.
Interesting backstory, if I may, about Billy Joel. Billy Joel, his dad was a classically trained musician, and Billy was classically trained as a pianist. But he discovered his fingers were too short to play the classical repertoire. His stubby little fingers were much more suited to rock music. And so he went into rock music and became a rock musician. Meanwhile, mum and dad divorced. Father had a second family. Billy Joel's half-brother is a classical conductor, Alexander Joel.
Did not know any of that.
Yeah. So I can identify with Billy Joel because I came down the same track, though I think my fingers might be a little longer than his.
What about your family background in music?
Yeah, well, my dad was a singer, an amateur singer, so the Belfast equivalent of the R&R, the Belfast Grand Opera Society. He would have trodden the boards in the Grand Opera House once a year in their production. My mother sang around the house. She didn't do it outside the house, but she was forever singing. She loved singing. And the big deal then in our family, we didn't so much have recorded music, but the extended family would gather in one of the houses, and there'd be a piano, and there'd be a sing-song like Goodbye from the White Horse Inn and all these other...
And did you have to learn your party pieces and learn how to play the piano growing up?
I did. And the Black Velvet Band was in there as one of them. And my father's favourite was the Boys from the County Armagh, with me as the accompanist. So that was just the way it was. There was no recorded music. It was all live and all genuinely enjoyed.
And so where did your love of classical music come from, which we hear a lot on Lyric FM?
Well, this was, my mother wanted me to be like Billy Joel, classically trained. So off to piano lessons I went at 6 or 7, and went through all the grades on the piano. When I got to big school, to the Methodist College in Belfast, because I was a piano player, I could read the bass clef, the lower clef. So when they were looking for people in the orchestra, they would get violinists out of those who could maybe read the musical notation of the melody. But the cellists had to come from the piano school because they could read the notes for the cello on the lower stave. And so I was in the orchestra then for the whole time as I was playing rugby and cricket and all the rest. I was also playing in the school orchestra. So all this was going into my head. And I took music to O-level, which is 16 years of age, junior cert. So I was kind of trained in music while all the time being the rock and roll kid that I never gave up, until in my 20s I realised that all this musical indoctrination, for want of a better word, had created in my head this love of the classical music, classical in the loosest of terms, and suddenly I was now immersed in that as well as all the rest.
Okay, best gig you're ever at?
Ah, well, I mentioned Elton and I mentioned Billy, And they played together at Croke Park in May in 1998. And we'd super seats in the Hogan Stand. They were, the stage was either in front of, not the Hogan Stand, the other side.
The Cusack.
The Cusack Stand. The Hogan Stand had either had the stage in it or in front of it. I remember because we had wonderful seats in the Cusack.
In the Arcturus box, was
yeah,
it?
Probably, yeah. But they were great. They sang each other's songs. And it was a terrific night. A really, really wonderful night. And I still have the T-shirt. Because it was just, I had to have a memento of this amazing coming together of two terrifically talented piano men and the songs that they sang, and to hear them sing each other's songs and sing duetting in each other's songs was just something else. Two baby grands facing each other and the two boys singing to each other. It was just terrific.
Well, actually, it's not from the Croke Park show, but we have got a clip from Tokyo on that 1998 tour where Elton John and Billy Joel sing Your Song.
If I was a sculptor, does any get no or man who makes potions in a traveling shoe? Does not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, yeah, and this one's for you.
That up on YouTube tonight.
Yes, indeed, I will, yeah. It'll be great to see it all again. I didn't realise that they were there. I hadn't been looking for them, but that brings back wonderful memories. It was just a terrific show.
Adrian texts in to say, George is the best commentator I've had the pleasure to listen to, an old school pro, great on Lyric FM too. Favourite movie, actor or director?
Okay, it's movies really. The one that I keep thinking of is The Big Lebowski. There's a scene in that where they go to the door of a house to call in a debt or something, and there's a car parked down at the gate of the house at the end of the drive, and one of the guys stays by the car and the other guy goes to the door, and he's having a hard time convincing the householder to pay up or whatever it is they want to do, and the fella down at the gate starts to bash up the car saying, this is what happens if you don't do what you're told. And it turns out that this is not the car of the householder, it's somebody else's car, and it just reminded me of something a former colleague might have done in similar circumstances.
Might have done or actually did do.
No, didn't actually do, but might have done. Completely lose the head inappropriately.
Who was that?
Yeah, I can't tell you that.
I just thought I'd try anyway.
And you know.
You also have A Fish Called Wanda,
yeah,
which you didn't see when it came out at first in 1988, yeah, but many years later.
Yeah, this is a really strange story. It's the playoff for the World Cup 2001-2002. And we're on our way home. Ireland have drawn in Iran, in Tehran. And the plane, it's a big transatlantic Airbus, is bringing the team and the supporters back from Tehran. And we're somewhere over the Middle East. And the plane is serving alcohol. On the way out, there was no alcohol because we were going to Tehran.
Yeah.
On the way back, there is. So it's party time, because not only is there alcohol, but Ireland have qualified for the World Cup in Japan and Korea. So the plane is making its way through the darkened sky on its way back to Dublin. And we're all having a party. And I've see this, A Fish Called Wanda, that somebody had told me was an absolutely terrific movie and I'd never seen it. So I put the headphones on and I start watching, and I'm having the little tipple watching the movie and really rocking in my seat. But I'm not the only one who's rocking, because the whole plane is rocking because of the circumstances of the victory, and we're at the World Cup. And on comes the pilot and he says, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to ask you to take your seats, please. We're about to enter an area of some turbulence. There was no turbulence. The turbulence was all on the plane. He just wanted everyone to sit down because they were having such a hard time of it up front.
Let's hear a clip from that movie, A Fish Called Wanda. This is where the con artist Wanda, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, lectures her partner Otto, played by Kevin Kline, after he blows their heist.
I was dealing with something delicate, Otto. I'm setting up a guy who's incredibly important to us, who's going to tell me where the loot is and if they're going to come and arrest you, and you'll come loping in like Rambo without a jockstrap and you dangle him at a fifth floor window. Now, was that smart?
Okay.
Was it shrewd? Was it good tactics or was it stupid?
Don't call me stupid.
Oh, right! To call you stupid would be an insult to stupid people. I've known sheep that could outwit you. I've worn dresses with higher IQs, but you think you're an intellectual, don't you, ape?
Apes don't read philosophy.
Yes, they do, Otto. They just don't understand it. Now, let me correct you on a couple things, okay? Aristotle was not Belgian. Oh. The central message of Buddhism is not every man for himself.
You
and
mean...
the London Underground is not a political movement. Those are all mistakes, Otto. I looked them up. Now, you have just assaulted the one man who can keep you out of jail and make you rich. So what are you going to do about it, huh? What would an intellectual do? What would Plato do?
Apologies.
Pardon me?
Apologies.
What?
Apologize.
Right.
Excellent. A Fish Called Wanda. Okay. Favorite books or authors?
Oh, anything by John le Carré would be right up there with me. Just the way he was able to weave the plot around something that you didn't quite get was current affairs. And then when you're just approaching the end of the book, you kind of, this is a fictionalized version of that. And he does it every time, and it's just brilliant. And the whole spy genre fascinates me anyway, because having lived in Germany at a time when the wall was still up and having had the opportunity to visit East Germany, it's an area of history that fascinates me. And this fictionalization of the Cold War is just something that I can lose myself in, and I really, really enjoy it.
Well, the spy lead novel, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, is the one that I have on the list. As it happens, the late John le Carré's son, Nick Harkaway, will be with us in the very near future talking about the book he's written.
Yeah.
Continuing the Smiley series on behalf of his father.
Yes, quite incredible. And the family history, of course, of John le Carré, so upset about Brexit that he found his Irish roots and took out Irish citizenship and wrapped himself in an Irish flag in his home in the southwest of England with a bottle of claret or whatever it was red from France, saying, "I'm still European."
Okay. Favourite TV show when you were growing up? What did you watch?
It was the Westerns when I was really young. It was like The Lone Ranger and Cheyenne and things like that. Gunsmoke, There's Been a Killing, Mr. Dillon. And then as I got a bit older, it was a detective series. Like, I remember No Hiding Place on ITV. And then later than that, there was, of course, The Sweeney. And Minder, John Thaw and Dennis Waterman. And then more recently, of course, the late John Thaw in Inspector Morse. They're the kind of TV programs that make me want to sit down and watch. Like last night I had watched Shetland, the series on the BBC, which is another take on the whodunit. And it's just that kind of thing fascinates me and keeps me interested.
The Sweeney was just a little bit before my time. I'm more a Minder person from the 80s. But the Sweeney from 75 to 78 with John Thaw. Let's hear a little bit in this clip where he stops an art collector played by Linda Bellingham from escaping after a heist went wrong.
Now, which country are we talking about?
Amsterdam. Mm.
Don't you need a warrant?
No, not as you invited me in.
I did not ask you in. How dare you come in here without a warrant?
Cancel it.
Your hire car to the airport. It broke down. So where do you meet the boys?
Boys? I'm sorry, Inspector. I don't know what you're talking about.
Colin and Ray.
I still don't know.
That tick in the corner of your eye. I sometimes get that when I'm tired. Or nervous.
Who said anything about being nervous?
Dry.
George? Did he croak?
Who?
Geisler.
Yeah, not many. Before the ambulance arrived.
You mean dead?
That's right, miss. They smashed his head in. Cracked it like an eggshell.
Who's his next of kin?
What?
Next of kin. Wife, kids. Who do we contact?
It was only supposed to knock him out.
That's all it did do. Knocked him out permanently.
So now you're an accessory to murder as well.
I'm sorry.
Funny thing. They're always sorry.
When they're caught.
Oh, yeah. When?
Was there an edge to the Sweeney that wasn't common in a lot of TV shows in the 70s?
That was it. It was more, it's police drama didn't have that kind of, well, they're tough men too about it.
Yeah.
But the Sweeney, for me anyway, was the first that really did. And I think that was what made it so appealing, was that the two characters played by John Thaw and Dennis Waterman were really playing on the edge all the way through, and it was a really edgy drama, and it was very entertaining. If somewhat dated, if you look at it now, but at the time, it was terrific.
Plays or theatre shows, musicals. I think you've a lot of choices here, don't you?
Well, I love Jersey Boys. I went with my daughter when she was living in London. We went to see Jersey Boys in the West End, and it just blew me away because the Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons songs—they all have a story in them, and the story was brought to life, and it was just a terrific 2.5 hours of entertainment. But anything with a good storyline and good tunes, I like, and I'm very fond of the opera. And a particular favourite would be La Boheme, which we saw in the English National Opera in London in Covent Garden. A terrific performance there too. And also the Gilbert and Sullivan, the Mikado, and the Lord High Executioner's Little List. I've got a little list.
Okay, buried treasure. This is where we ask every guest to just come up with something that little bit different that you think we should know about. And you've gone for a piece of classical music, which I know absolutely nothing about.
Well, this is the one that really hooked me on classical music and all that there is about it. This is a piece by a Czech composer called Bedřich Smetana. And it's called Vltava, which is the name of the river that runs through the present-day Czech Republic. And this was the text that we studied at O-level music, and it was explained in all its detail by the most wonderful teacher, Henry Willis, who was the head of music at the Methodist College in Belfast. It tells the story in music of a river that starts as a babbling brook, two little streams, nice little twirly bits at the start. It then grows in stature as it goes through the countryside. It passes a wedding, you can hear them dancing, and then it goes majestically under the bridge in Prague and onto the Elbe. Wonderful music.
Let's hear it. George Hamilton, this is arguably the most cultured finish we've ever had to The Last Word. But Philistine that I am, I have to talk over it and bring the show to an end. Thank you very much for putting together all your choices and coming in to talk about them. And congratulations on the publication of the new book as well, The Hamilton Files.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
The Last Word on Today FM.